Christianity is not about simply joining a church and getting in the church directory. And it's more than being baptized and sitting in a pew on Sunday. A major part of Christianity is the process of changing from looking like the world to looking like Christ. You see, it's about Christ in you, making an adjustment from the inside out. And we find passages like 2 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 5. Test yourselves to see if you are in the faith. Examine yourselves. Or do you not recognize this about yourselves, that Jesus Christ is in you, unless indeed you fail the test? Galatians chapter 2 and verse 20. I have been crucified with Christ, and it is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and delivered himself up for me. Luke chapter 9, verse 23. And he, that is Jesus, was saying to them all, if anyone wishes to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. You see, it's a denying self. I move out and Christ moves in. And we can see from Luke chapter 9 that this is to be done daily. Well, why? Because the old you keeps wanting to come back. But you got to deny self and say, no, I don't want to be that guy anymore. We're now to have the mind and heart of Christ. We are to think the way he would think. We are to say what he would say. We are to act the way he would act. 1 John 2, 6, the one who says he abides in him ought himself to walk in the same manner as he walked. And so we're always to ask that question, what would Jesus do? But of course, that question is worthless if I don't know what Jesus would do. And so I think that what we need to be doing is looking through the New Testament and examining how Jesus, what he did in the different circumstances of life, and how we can learn from and imitate him. Today we're going to be examining how Jesus dealt with stress. Now, I had a few things this week that stressed me out, and so this sermon is just as much for me. So number one, what is stress? The first thing we need to realize is that stress only occurs within our minds. You got an incredulous look on your face. Most people probably think it's our external circumstances that cause stress, but that's not really true, because you can put two people in the exact same circumstance and have one stressed out while the other one is at peace. Our external circumstances, they may stimulate or motivate stress, but they're not the actual cause of it. Stress is simply a reaction to what we consider to be adverse conditions. Now, most people's stress can be put into one of these three categories. And the first one is fear. Sometimes it's fear of the known. Go outside and get a switch off of the tree. And sometimes it's fear of the unknown. Just wait until your father gets home. I don't know about you, but those kind of statements caused me all kinds of stress as a child. Well, the second one is frustration. Frustration is usually the result of being hindered from reaching a goal, and that's why road rage is so prevalent. You cut someone off and cause them to miss the green light or something like that. Maybe you're tailgating them, I don't know, but in some cities, well, there's actually the possibility of getting shot. But of course, there are simple things like your computer or your car acting up, and those certainly cause frustration as well. Well, the third one is pressure, and pressure either comes from deadlines or expectations. And some of you have very demanding jobs, and some of you even have multiple jobs. And like a lot of people, there are times when my work, it just gets stacked up and on top of my normal tasks. Well, I sometimes will have weddings and funerals and gospel meetings and counseling and hospital visits and other special tasks that just spring up. And I'm sure, like me, that there are many times when you wish that you could stop or slow down time. And talk about pressure. If you don't like my sermons and the way I do my PowerPoint, you might start looking for a new minister. Pressure. Proverbs 12:25. It says, anxiety weighs down the heart. you look it up, you find that the English word worry, it actually comes from an older word that means to strangle. That's pretty good. Worry and stress can certainly strangle our peace of mind and our trust in God and our enjoyment of life. Okay, with that in mind, let's turn our discussion here to Jesus. And so number two, we got Jesus in stressful circumstances. Did he ever find himself in circumstances that would cause you and me to have stress? Oh yeah. Now let's go through those three different areas that stress comes from. So fear. Did Jesus ever find himself in circumstances where we would be, say, afraid for our lives? Well, if you got a Bible handy, let's turn over and take a look at Mark chapter 4. Now, this was that time in the boat. I'm sure you'll remember it. Mark 4, let's read verses 35 through 41. And on that day, when evening had come, he said to them, "Let us go over to the other side." And leaving the multitude, they took him along with them, just as he was, in a boat, and the other boats were with him. And there arose a fierce gale of wind, and the waves were breaking over the boat so much that the boat was already filling up. And he himself was in the stern, asleep on the cushion. And they awoke him and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" And being aroused, he rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Hush, be still." And the wind died down, and it became perfectly calm. And he said to them, "Why are you so timid? How is it that you have no faith?" And they became very much afraid and said to one another, "Who then is this that even the wind and the sea obey him?" Now, have you ever been in a boat during a storm? There was this one time when I was in this little aluminum fishing boat with my father and grandfather when a storm kicked up, and I'll tell you, I really got to see how fast that boat could move because they did not want to stay on that lake for another minute. Some of these guys here were fishermen, and they had probably seen many storms, but this was one that was filling up the boat. It was actually scaring them. But where was Jesus? Okay, what else? Have you ever had someone who was trying to kill you? I haven't. Well, at least that I know of. I don't think that kid in the seventh grade really meant what he said. But Jesus had it virtually during his entire ministry until they finally crucified him. And they rose up and cast him out of the city and led him to the brow of the hill on which their city had been built in order to throw him down the cliff. Luke 4. Therefore, they picked up stones to throw at him. John 8. The Jews took up stones again to stone him. John 10. And they plotted together to seize Jesus by stealth and kill him. Matthew 26 and so forth. Okay, let's go down to frustration. Did Jesus ever find himself in circumstances where we would be frustrated? Well, in John chapter 6, Jesus said some things at the people they did not like. In verse 60, it says, "Many therefore of the disciples, when they heard this, said, 'This is a difficult statement. Who can listen to it?'" In verse 66, "As a result of this, many of his disciples withdrew and were not walking with him anymore." And looking at the chapter, it seems that Jesus lost hundreds of his followers there. Now, do you think a preacher might be frustrated if a few hundred people left the congregation where he preached? And then we find passages like John 7:5, "For not even his brothers were believing in him." Now, I can't imagine anything more frustrating than my family not believing in me. And we also find times like in Mark chapter 8, where his apostles, they just didn't get it. They misunderstood what he was saying. And that's something that really frustrates our wives, when we as men just don't get it. But how does it feel to be misunderstood? And finally, pressure. Did Jesus ever find himself in circumstances where we would feel pressure? Well, let's turn over to Mark chapter 1 now. Try to put yourself in his shoes here. Mark chapter 1, let's read 29 through 37. "And immediately after they had come out of the synagogue, they came into the house of Simon and Andrew with James and John. Now, Simon's mother-in-law was lying sick with a fever, and immediately they spoke to him about her. And he came to her and raised her up. taking her by the hand, and the fever left her, and she waited on them. And when evening had come, after the sun had set, they began bringing to him all who were ill and those who were demon-possessed, and the whole city had gathered at the door. And he healed many who were ill with various diseases and cast out many demons. And he was not permitting the demons to speak because they knew who he was. And in the early morning, while it was still dark, he arose and went out and departed to a lonely place and was praying there. And Simon and his companions hunted for him, and they found him and said to him, "Everyone is looking for you," and so on and so forth. People were always demanding his time and expecting things from him. "Tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me. Show us a sign. Lord, evermore, give us that bread," and so forth. I mean, here he couldn't even have time to get alone to pray. Pressure. Matthew 22, we see the Pharisees, the Sadducees, and the scribes. Well, they got together and they bombarded him with the most difficult, the most controversial questions that they could come up with. And they're trying to make him look bad. They're trying to stump him, make him look bad in front of the multitudes. And they hit him with their best political question, their best doctrinal question, and their best ethical question. Now, how did you feel in school when one of your teachers put you on the spot? That is nothing next to what Jesus went through. Jesus had more cause to be stressed out than anyone I know. But the thing is, he never allowed it to unnerve him, to discourage or hinder him. Most people, they'd have been having a nervous breakdown in those situations. They would have simply given up, or maybe they would have attacked someone. Not Jesus. So, what was his secret? Was it yoga, squeezing a stress ball, aromatherapy, or dark chocolate? Those things might help a bit. That's not how Jesus overcame it. And so number three, how Jesus overcame stress. Since stress is a matter of the mind, what was going on in Jesus' mind? Well, we're going to look at three keys, and I think this is what answers the question. And the first key was his perspective and insight. Jesus didn't see this realm as his home. It wasn't his permanent dwelling. He knew where he was from. He knew where he was going. John 17:5, before he was arrested, Jesus prayed, "Now, Father, glorify me together with yourself with the glory which I had with you before the world was." Jesus never put down deep roots. And I think the same should be true of us. 1 Peter 2:11, Peter said, "Beloved, I urge you as aliens and strangers," that's not talking about little green men, okay, "aliens and strangers to abstain from fleshly lusts which wage war against the soul." We're to live as if we're aliens and strangers here. This world is not my home. I'm just a passing through. We're to be like Velcro people, easily pulled up. As in the illustration, it's kind of like camping. You see, when you go camping, you don't care that you're not eating off fine china and that your clothes get dirty. I mean, you'll even sleep on the ground and bathe in the river. Why? Why can you put up with those things? Because you know that you're going home in a few days. You can put up with a lot of stuff for a short period of time, can't you? And that's the way Jesus saw this realm. In Romans 8:18, the Apostle Paul said, "For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory that is to be revealed to us." And so like Jesus, we'll be able to put up with the stressful circumstances of this world when we realize that this realm, the way it really is, and we set our sights on heaven. And so I think it was Thomas Blake who gave this advice, but I really like it. "Every morning, lean thine arms upon the windowsill of heaven and gaze upon thy Lord. Then with the vision in your heart, turn strongly to meet thy day." All right, well, the second key is that he had a single purpose in life. John 6:38, he said, "For I have come down from heaven not to do my own will, but the will of him who sent me." It was always in the forefront of his mind. That's what guided him through his earthly sojourn. Jesus refused to compromise in the face of fear, in the face of frustration or pressure. He didn't care if what he said was unpopular. He said things that caused him to lose hundreds of followers. He wasn't pressured into being politically correct. He talked about the resurrection around the Sadducees, and he talked about hypocrisy around the Pharisees. And why was that? Because his only purpose was to please his Father. If we want to be able to overcome stress as Jesus did, well, I think his purpose must become our purpose. You know, and speaking of worrying about the physical things that we need for life, like food, clothing, and shelter, Jesus said, "Seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. So do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will care for itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own." What's the advice? Put the kingdom first. There's the purpose. And then take it one day at a time. And the third key is that he depended on heavenly help. Jesus knew that there was a loving Father who was always there looking in on him and supporting him. Now, if your dad was a billionaire, do you think you would worry about bill collectors? Would you ever worry about if there was going to be food on the table? And what if your father was the creator of the universe? That's how he could react the way he did in the most adverse circumstances. That is why fear and frustration or pressure couldn't stress him out. Why do you think he spent so much time in prayer? See, looking through the Gospel of Luke, I found 15 times when Jesus was praying, and sometimes praying all night long. The psalmist said, "When anxiety was great within me, your consolation brought me joy." Consolation has to do with being comforted. Where should we go to receive comfort? Paul told us in Philippians chapter 4, "Be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication. With thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God, and the peace of God, which surpasses all comprehension, shall guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus." Instead of taking it all on ourselves, we give it to God. Peter told us in 1 Peter 5, "Humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you at the proper time, casting all your anxiety on him, because he cares for you." Again, we give it to God. You see, you do what you can, and then you put it in God's hands. And going back to Matthew 6:34, "Do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will care for itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own." Why do we waste our precious time and our energy worrying about things that we cannot change and that may not even come to pass? You see, many of the things that we worry about never happen. And if they do happen, well, God will help us through them. There's a quote, it's sometimes attributed to Mark Twain. It goes something like this: "I am an old man and have known a great many troubles in my life, some of which actually happened." And then, of course, there's the saying, "Do not worry about tomorrow. God is already there." I've heard it explained like this. When you're on a train and it starts going through a tunnel, and it gets dark and scary, you don't throw away your ticket and try to jump off the train. You sit still and you trust the engineer. Well, that's what we need to do in life when we are going through a time that seems dark and scary with a lot of stress. Perspective, purpose, and dependence on God. When we look through the Bible, we discover that having stress and anxiety, it's something that God doesn't want for us, okay? It's something that he wants us to work on and to overcome. In Matthew 6:27, Jesus asked, "Who by being worried can add a single hour to his life?" What's the point? Anxiety cannot do one positive thing for your situation. I've read that it can actually cause you health problems and shorten your life. You can't worry yourself well, but apparently you can worry yourself sick. And here's the thing, the temptation to worry and to get stressed out, it's never going to go away. There's always going to be things in your life that we can worry about. But what if we had the mind of Christ? What if we saw things the way that Jesus saw them and we thought the way Jesus thought? If you did that, would you be afraid? Would you allow people to intimidate you? Would it really upset you if you lost all your stuff? Would you ever get so frustrated that you'd throw a punch? Not if you saw this realm as temporary and not your home. Not if you had one purpose in life to do the will of the Father, and not if you knew that a loving God was always there looking in on you and supporting you. Not if you had the mind and heart of Christ. And we can see what happens when people get that mind. In Acts chapter 12, Herod, he had James put to death with a sword, and he saw that it pleased the Jews, and so he had Peter arrested. Well, verse 6, it says, "And on the very night when Herod was about to bring him forth, Peter was sleeping between two soldiers bound with two chains." Can you imagine a more stressful situation, and yet he was sleeping? I wonder whom he learned that from. We too can have that mind and that heart, and we can overcome stress as Jesus did. When people look at you and me, do they see Jesus? It's no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me.